Welcome to Prima's 2024 podcast series. My name is Shonda Ragland. I am the Senior Director of Education and Training at Prima. On this Prima podcast, Robert Buckhammer will discuss the do's and don'ts of the RFP process. Robert is the Senior Vice President and Partner at USI Southwest Incorporated. We will also be joined by Prima's Education Coordinator, Taekwon Gilbert. Taekwon will moderate the discussion. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for joining us today, Robert.
Well, thank you, Taekwon. My pleasure, and thanks for taking the time to talk about requests for proposals and why they're so valuable.
So first off, what is a request for proposal?
Great question, Taekwon. And let's just shorten it down to RFP, right? Request for proposal equals RFP. But an RFP is an instructional document, right, used to secure proposals for insurance and or risk management services. It's an opportunity to legally, right, because you're posting this and there's rules and regulations. We're going to get into all that, but it's an opportunity to step up your risk management game. It's an important part of the process, and if all stakeholders follow instructions, the results should be very productive for the public entity and yield some very good results.
Why should the public entity identify desired outcomes?
Well, I think you need to know where you want to end up before you start, right? So I don't know many people that just get in their car and start driving and not know where they want to end up. So to that regard, I think the public entity should you know, make a list of what they want to accomplish for the RFP, you know, whether it's change brokers, whether it's change program design, add coverage, a litany of things, or add services that they're not currently being provided by their vendors. So the RFP is a very valuable opportunity to incorporate, change, basically upgrade the risk management deliverables provided by the vendor.
So who all needs to be involved in this?
Well, you know, the great question there too, Taekwon. So it's a team effort. You know, it's important you've got stakeholders involved from the top of the house, meaning your department heads. And I would advocate that you know, they be involved so they can help you understand what their outcomes would look like, those that would be involved in that process, that would be affected by that process, right, of the eventual outcome. So we certainly want to have, you know, the executive and elected officials, if you can get those folks on board. You definitely want legal involved and on board and also purchasing, right? Purchasing and legal really drive a lot of the RFP process. Failure to build consensus early in this process can result in less than desirable outcomes. And that's not what we're all about. That's not what we want to have happen.
Why should the RFP contain rules?
Well, RFPs have to contain rules because if you don't follow the rules, then you, as a vendor, you get disqualified, right? And the rules allow the public entity to kind of drive and keep the process moving forward in the direction that they want it to move in. So, you know, the very existence of public entities is based on rules of governance, right? So, you know, public entity risk managers should be familiar with the rules that govern purchasing and contractual agreements. I mean, this is really what this is all. It's all insurance is one big contract. It's important to identify clear and concise rules for participation and response to the RFP process, which do not conflict with the organization's requirements. And it's very important to enforce the consequences when a vendor or respondent does not follow the rules and regulations, no matter the intent.
What other information or data should be included in an RFP?
Oh, this is the $64 question. Yes, take one. I can't tell you how many RFPs I see or I'm sent that are issued with, I call them half-baked. There's hardly any information in it. It's old information. There's not enough to even get started. So the RFP should be a very navigable document. Vendors can't meet the requirements if they're not clearly defined, or the information is just not simply provided. So, again, information at a minimum should be included as follows, like required legal forms. There's going to be legal forms that are required, you know, by the legal folks at your public entity, and sometimes state forms as well. Outline your requested limits, your coverage extensions, your retentions, basically specifications, and your preferred programs, or whether you want to have a guaranteed cost versus a small deductible versus a loss sensitive versus a high self-insured retention. RFP timelines are critical. Take one. You've got to have a timeline and hold to it, okay? Especially when you're talking about Q&A questions and answers. Specific standards and expectations should be outlined. Evaluation criteria matrix should be included in that as well. Proposers and respondents, they want to know how they're going to be graded and judged. Put a description of the entity, past, present, future. Where are you going? Where you been? Where are you now? The entity's desired goals and objectives, right? That's, you know, here's what we want to get out of this. Put in statistical and underwriting information. Loss data, right? Gross revenues, expenditures, they can get that from the certified comprehensive financial audits that are always posted online. But again, give them the link. Again, you want to provide as much information to the vendor as possible in order for them to do a very good job pre-underwriting and actually getting you the right responses from the carriers. Put in dates for pre-proposal conferences, right? So most of these RFPs have a pre-proposal meeting, and really what's outlined there is the instructions for the RFP, and then people get to ask, respondents get to ask questions. So very important. You know, some make it mandatory. Most of the ones that I participate in are voluntary or optional, but I try to attend all of them to show interest. You want to put the interview schedule in there. People do schedule calendars out, so very important that you put interview dates inside that RFP document. So respondents, the vendors, they know when they're going to be called upon if they're selected for a finalist interview. You want to have a firm date for the award, and then the contract effective date always helps as well.
Why should the public entity outline the response format?
Well, so risk managers, usually they're the ones that are kind of behind the scenes, but they're really driving the bus and helping the purchasing agent, right? But it's very important to include an outline of a response format to standardize all responses. You kind of want to, if you're reading, and remember, it's not just the risk manager or the legal department or the purchasing department. You may have 7 or 8 different departments involved in the analysis of these RFP responses. If they were all willy-nilly and all over the place, the folks would not know where to look to compare, right? So it's very important you lay out the response format and what that should look like, right? A sample format would include the following, take one. An executive summary includes vendor recommendations, you know, for the proposed lines of coverage. A proposal coverage questionnaire, right? That should be involved and clearly outlined where that needs to go. The required legal forms obviously need to be included in the right place. Program structure recommendations, service enhancements and value-added services. How about the account service team and bios, right? So, again, these are all kind of just in an order. References, you want current and past. Vendor scope of services contract. I typically, the entities that I deal with, take one, have their own contract that they want us to vet with our legal folks, and we're fine with that. Again, we at USI have our own client service agreement that we can provide them upon request. And finally, and not necessarily ultimately final, but specimen policy forms, you want to see and review the policy forms that would include all applicable forms and endorsements. It's a very good idea to have the response format outlined in that manner.
Why should the public entity utilize electronic RFP notification technology?
Well, I'll tell you what, that's been a welcome, from my perspective, after 41 years of driving responses in, relying on clear roads and no traffic jams and wrecks. We've got several of them out there, these electronic RFP programs that you can sign up for, and at no, some of them at no cost to the vendor, so there's no barrier to entry, but it helps the public entity get the RFP advertised. It creates easy access for those that most everybody has access to a computer nowadays. Take one. I know I don't see anybody without a cell phone anymore, and you can certainly access those databases through mobile technology. But it gets the word out, and it also allows the vendors, the respondents, to be able to upload their responses with ease and also to help with getting those responses delivered on time. I know that I've appreciated entities that are using electronic RFP notification and response technology. So it is the 21st century, folks, and you know, embracing this technology, it just helps the public entity overall.
What should the public entity do once the RFP is issued?
Well, let's talk about that, right? Okay, they issue the RFP, now what? Well, there's going to be questions that are going to be asked. No matter how much information you put in an RFP, somebody's going to want something that's not in it. So we want to. I recommend that they promptly respond to questions in an RFP addendum to be issued after the question deadline, and allow enough time between the time when the public entity issues the addendum and then the due date, right? I see, and I've been involved in RFPs where they issue the responses to the questions, but they only give you 3 days to respond and upload your response. And sometimes that's not just a good strategy, because people are asking, carriers are asking these questions, and they need time to react, right? So again, make sure you've got enough time between the addendum and the response deadline. Then certain vendors, especially if you're looking at property insurance, take one, they're going to want to come out and inspect and see what they're quoting, right? See what type of condition the property's in. So those requests need to be granted, and actually they should be, if property is part of the RFP, in that basic rules and regulations we talked about earlier, right? The fact that if you want to come out and survey our properties, we're going to do it on such and such a date. And give 2 dates. Not everybody can make 1 date. You want to be flexible, but in a variety of different scenarios. An extension may be requested for very good reasons, and that ultimately it should benefit the public entity. There just could have been issues with timing. And so if somebody's requesting an extension, they're trying very hard to make sure that they get the best response to the public entity for their RFP. And you want to make sure that your evaluation team, remember we talked about that, purchasing, legal, the risk, and then maybe the 3 or 4 other department heads that are part of this evaluation team, you want to make sure they've cleared their schedules and they're ready to review and objectively evaluate the vendor's RFP responses when received and as per the RFP timeline. I've been involved in some of these RFPs, Taekwon, where we submit it and 4 months later, they're still debating on, you know, they're still evaluating it. And that, to me, is just a little disrespectful to the vendors and respondents.
How should the responses be evaluated?
Well, they need to be evaluated objectively. And there's typically 3 areas that are usually compared, right? So pricing is always, not always, but in a majority of the time, the one that carries the most weight. Quality, did you follow the rules? Did you follow the response format? If you can't follow the instructions, you're probably not going to be able to handle the entity's insurance program, right? So it's very important that the responses is objectively judged on quality. And then references. Everybody is very interested in, well, who else do you write in the space that looks like me, right? If I'm a water district, I want to know you write other water districts, right? If I'm a county with a large jail, I want to know you can write a county with a large jail. So references are very important. And, you know, the valuation matrix, you know, all as per the evaluation matrix set forth in the RFP. So references are a little bit subjective and can be difficult. I would expect at least all my references are positive. I'm not putting anybody in there that's going to give me a negative reference. I would pay special attention to performance guarantees. It's best to consider them when you evaluate quality instead of price. And performance guarantees really are an opportunity. The vendor's actually saying, if I don't meet your metrics, you don't need to pay me as much as I'm charging. Very interesting. And it gives them a lot of impetus to go ahead and toe the line on the services provided. And then there's 5 key elements to consider, right? Risk management philosophy when you're looking at references. Industry experience, right? Does the vendor, do they know the insurance market? Do they have knowledge and relationships? And we'll get into more of that later in the interview process. Creative program ideas. Are they just giving you the same old, right, that you already have? Are they actually providing in the response creative new ideas. And we talked about vendor guarantees, and that would be the performance guarantees as well. So very important. Objectivity is key to the evaluation process, Daquan.
Why should the public entity conduct interviews?
Well, I've not ever bought a car without driving it first. How about you? So you have the written response. Most likely they've got bios in there that have pictures and of the service team and the team leader and all the different technical resources that'll be, you know, providing the service on the account. But it's always a good idea, in my opinion, take a look at the team, right? At least those key members of the team that are invited for the interview. So I liken the RFP process. It's like a personal ad or online dating service, right? You put your expectations and profile out to the world. Respondents are going to attempt to satisfy your requirements via their written process, or written response, I should say. If they impress you, right, through compliance and to the defined process, it would behoove the public entity to invite them to an interview whereby you can determine if they are worthy of earning your business. Get an eyeball on them. I mean, this could be a beginning of, and it's, you know, of a long-term relationship. And certainly, consider the following when you're in the interview process or outlining how that works. You know, the finalists, and there could be as many as five. I would kind of narrow it down to three, but finalists make their oral presentations, right? It's a huge plus for the entity. Meet your next potential vendor in person before you actually make the recommendation to city council or commissioner's court or to the school board. Presentations should last an hour and be consistent for all candidates. Take one. I was part of an interview process that lasted 20 minutes on about a $4 million spend. Now, I just don't consider that doing that a good move by that particular municipality, but that was their rules. They had 20 minutes to make a decision on who their next broker was going to be. Make it an hour. You get a pretty good look at somebody in an hour. Presentation teams, should be limited to the actual members of the account service team. A lot of, there are brokers out there, take one, that'll flag somebody in from New York or Chicago or L.A., and they're the industry expert, but you'll never talk to them again. They're just there to close the deal. I would recommend that the public entity say, hey, we want to meet the actual people that are going to be servicing our account. And then I would recommend developing a set of questions to ask each vendor's or respondent's team to enable a consistent comparison of their answers. So those are my recommendations on interviews. I think you can get a lot out of an interview by, adhering to these outlines and things of that nature. So
how should the public entity conduct the award process?
Well, it's decision time, right? So you've reviewed the RFPs, you've had evaluations, you've had the interviews. Now it's the award, right? So it's really important to notify the winner, obviously, but it's also important to notify those that didn't make the cut. So, often in the haste to get things done, we fail to notify all who were involved in the process. Do not forget to involve those in positions of authority. To contractually obligate your public entity before you notify anyone else. Consensus must be reached internally and the process followed, right? Additionally, business etiquette suggests that the public entity should thank all those that responded. So you've got internally and then you've got externally. That was my point. Internally, you want to thank those who are involved. Externally, you want to thank all those that responded. And you want the vendors to feel they receive proper consideration for their efforts and to respond to future RFPs you may be issuing, right? So, again, it's an opportunity to encourage them to respond to future RFPs and let them know where they didn't quite make the cut, right? Here's where you could have been a little, and as an industry veteran, 41 years in the public sector business, take one, I ask for an exit interview on all RFPs that we do not, make the cut on, whether it was price, we left something out, what have you. So government decision makers are subject to far more scrutiny, right, than their private sector cousins regarding the awarding of contracts. We all know that, right, because everything's public. Transparency is critical in the RFP decision-making process, and it's a valuable tool for the public entity risk managers if done right. So disclosure of the evaluation process not only enhances the public entity's reputation, right, it gives vendors and respondents guidance in perfecting responses to future RFPs. So, again, that feedback's very valuable. You know, in most cases, send the final evaluation matrix. I say most cases, in all cases, send the matrix out to the guys that didn't make the cut, the vendors didn't make the cut, so they may confirm whether their response was deficient, right? The matrix may also be forwarded to the insurance carrier so they will see where the marketplace is in an objective manner. You know, and going forward, what are the major benefits are, you know, you can, again, move upstream in product program design, move upstream in broker, you can move upstream in services. Poorly crafted RFPs result in equally poor responses and equally poor outcomes. Taking time to plan, thoughtfully deploy, and manage the effort results in a scenario that validates risk management decisions and contribution to public service. The RFP process, take one, when done right and done correctly, rewards all stakeholders, including taxpayers, affected employees, and the vendor community.
We've reached the end of our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Please visit the Prima website to hear other Prima podcasts, view upcoming Prima webinars, read Prima blogs, and learn about other Prima educational resources. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and our very own Prima Talk. Have an amazing day.